this is more than a hobby. Give them more like I'm Bobby. This is my team and they got me. Shout out to Billy, we're bonding. We got us 3 cups, mate. I know it ain't too late. We'll turn that 3 into 4 and turn that 4 into 8. So come on, you Irons. It's time, throw on your claret and blue and listen up to this rhyme. 112 years, wow. Iconic bowling ground at London Stadium.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the West Ham Way USA podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, Brawley Darbin, and I am in St. Louis. And we have on the other side, Tony Clark in Philadelphia.
Yep. I'm in Philly tonight, and I am glad to be back in Philly, man. Glad to be back.
Well, where have you been?
Well, so I, as much as I love New York, I was in New York this weekend to watch the game at Smithfield, but man, did I miss my house in Philly. But the New York Hammers are really where it's at. If anyone ever gets up there, you got to check it out. They always feel like they're the biggest group. They have a great bunch of guys, like my boy Jacob there. Shout out to them, man.
Yeah, for sure. So you actually got to go watch the game with other people. I did as well. I was able to sneak out on my wife's birthday and go watch with my peeps at the Amsterdam Tavern in St. Louis. And I had a great time. I mean, it was a rough way to start the afternoon. And I was thinking, why the hell did I drag myself here? But in the end, it worked out well and everything was all good. I wanted to, before we dive into the West Ham game, I did want to briefly talk about, I mean, it's just so good to have the Premier League back. Like, it makes your weekends, at least to me, a million times better because it gives you something to look forward to on Saturday mornings. Like, the Euros were great, but when you get the Premier League back and you have that slate, and now we have our regular slate of games back. Like, it's so good because you have your 6:30, you have your 1:30 central time kickoff game. And then you have a big slate of 9 a.m. games and you get to pick from whichever one. I was able to find the Gold Rush on Saturday morning or Gold Rush. And I was able to, it's like Red Zone, but for the Premier League, it's great. So you get to see all the goals as they go in. And I just wanted to mention how awesome it is to have the Premier League back just in general.
Yeah, I feel like I now have a purpose to wake up on the weekends. I know that sounds really corny and sad, but when West Ham is your life for what, 8 months of the year, that summer, and especially like I said in one of our previous podcasts, I don't have any ties for the Euro. Like, I don't have any real reason to watch other than just like, hey, more soccer. So, yeah, it's really exciting to wake up. I think Saturday was tough for me because I was really wanted us to play Saturday. I didn't want to wait a whole extra game. But, yeah, holy smokes. What a way to start, right, man?
Well, Brentford-Arsenal to kick things off, I thought was just a spectacular way to start. And for people that may or may not know, I mean, I don't want to call Brentford my quote-unquote second team because I hate that phrase, but Brentford are the team that my dad grew up right down the road from, and had it not been for one of his buddies, he probably would have been a Brentford fan because he probably, I think it's about 3 or 4 miles from his house, Griffin Park was, and now the new stadium's right around the corner from there. And to see them come up into the Premier League and then draw Arsenal the way for the opening season, and then to play as well as they did and win was just a spectacular way. Brentford fans didn't get to say goodbye to Griffin Park, their old stadium. So that was the first COVID season. It got cut short. I mean, can you imagine not being able to have said goodbye to the Bowling Ground? Like, how devastating that would have been for us. I mean, I can't imagine that as a Brentford supporter. And then to have your first full season in your new stadium, you can't even go. So I thought it was just a magical evening against Arsenal. And I actually laid $50 down on Brentford to win because that's how confident I was. I thought easiest bet of the century because – A, all the reasons I just listed, and B, Aubameyang and Lacazette were both missing. I thought it was a no-brainer, and I made $230 on a $50 bet. So, Brentford, welcome to the Premier League. I'm happy to have you.
Yeah, you have family ties to QPR as well. So, you have like a nice little West London little cocktail going on over there.
Yeah, for sure.
No, yeah, that was an interesting game. I did get to watch that when I finally got to New York. I took the train up on Friday. I took the day off, a much needed day off, I'll tell you that, from my job. But yeah, and it was, that game was crazy. I didn't expect it. You expected it. I did not. I, in our group chat, we did a, for everyone listening, we did a little preseason table prediction, and egg on my face, I actually thought Arsenal was going to rebound this year. And it is only the first game, and it's only 90 minutes, and they were without their two strikers. But I did not expect them to fall flat like that. And boy, did they lay a stinker.
Yeah, and it was just really cool to see, you know, I saw some people giving Brentford stick like they'd won the league for doing like a lap of honor after the game. But it was their first game with fans in the stadium and in their new ground. So I thought that was spectacular.
Who was giving them stick?
Oh, I saw people on Twitter saying, it was probably Arsenal fans, honestly. But they were just saying, act like you've won before, blah, 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 doing a lap of honor after your one win. And that's their first top flight win in 74 years and their first game in their new stadium that they didn't get to say goodbye to the old stadium. I mean, for all those reasons, like, I thought it was magical. And then to see Thomas Frank celebrate with the kid with special needs, I thought that was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. And all the players walking over to that kid and giving him high fives and hugs, I thought that was – and that is why I loved the USL so much over here, because it felt like you got to know the players and the manager and they would be a little more personal than like a Premier League team would. And it made me really happy to see that a Premier League team would take some time to go over to some kids and sign autographs and take pictures. I thought it was just really cool to see.
I'm appalled. I didn't know people were slating them for that. That's surprising to me. I mean, honestly, act like you've won before. They haven't. Like you said, they haven't. They haven't. So first, that's the first thing. Second of all, like you said, after 18 months of COVID or whatever we're doing now, and a few sprinkles back here and there, not a full stadium. And then on top of that, even if they won before, this is their first game back and in the brand new stadium. So, yeah. Oh no, absolutely deserved lap of honor. Honestly, more teams should do that. Most games anyway. Hey, we won. And we got an extra 5 minutes. Let's just do a lap around the field, clap, and shake some hands, sign some things. Like, does that hurt them that much?
No. I totally agree. The littlest gesture from a player, from a celebrity, not even like a famous, like just a player, you have no idea the impact that you have on some little kid when you go and do that. And for me, I've always said if I was like a celebrity or an athlete, and it's easier said than done, but like I would do everything I could to just go out of my way and just do little things that shit like brings a positive, like just a smile to some kid's face. And you have, like I said, you have no idea how much that means to them. And I know it from when I was a little kid. I had my favorite hockey player when I was a kid at my first ever St. Louis Blues game. I think it was the Blues playing against the Edmonton Oilers, I think. And the Blues backup goalie named Fred Brathwaite just gave me a smile, a wave when I was down from warmups. He tossed me a puck. And then after the game, he gave me his goalie stick. And I was a fan for life. And I know this is bad for people who can't see, but all those jerseys over there on that wall are all Fred Brathwaite jerseys. Those are all game-worn Fred Brathwaite jerseys. And then the guy, I wrote him a letter a couple of weeks later, and he signed me. He said he wrote me back and sent a signed headshot. So, I mean, it was like, that's what I'm saying. Like that was a big gesture of him to do that. But even like the smallest little things just really make me happy. And I really wanted to talk about just how awesome it was to see the Brentford manager and players celebrating with kids, because I think that genuinely is what the game is about. It just makes me so happy. So I really wanted to talk about that, and thank you for giving me the time to talk about that.
Well, I'm not the time police on this podcast, because I go on my own rambles too. So, So you watched where again?
I was at the Amsterdam Tavern for our game.
Oh, okay, we both watched it in pubs. I'll tell you what, man. That I know we kind of touched on it earlier, but it was different for me, because I think what we normally talk about on the podcast is I'm normally laying in bed watching. Right. I like watching in bed. I don't like watching in public sometimes, unless I'm there. I know it sounds like super, privileged because I get to go sometimes, but I get so wound up and I really don't like acting a fool in public. So, when you have that energy in the stadium, it's a little bit different. But like when you're at a bar and you're like jumping up and down and shit, like that's kind of weird. And everyone's like looking at you funny. So I try not to do that out in public. I'd like to do that at home.
Well, it's like this, that culture, like over here, it's totally different. Like if you were in a bar in England and you're watching with other fans, they'd be doing the same thing, but you don't get the same passion from like regular season games over here. Like, I don't know if that makes sense to you. Do you get what I'm saying? Like over here, the singing culture is like, that's bizarre and you get weird looks for that. So if you're singing in a bar, everyone looks at you funny. And then, yeah, if you're like celebrating, if you're like acting like a fanatic, like people look at you a little differently. So I just think the culture of sports are totally different from here and there. And I love aspects of both American sports culture and British and English sports culture. But one thing I've always wished that Americans would take to is like just the raw passion. And you do get that like in really big games, you do get like the limbs and the scenes, but like generally for like regular season games, like West Ham fans, when we scored the penalty rebound, were going absolutely mental. And if that was like an MLS game, you would get like the clapping and like, you'd be happy, but you don't get like the scenes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like way about like a lot of sports, though, not just MLS. Like, I don't want to just shit on MLS.
No. Yeah, that's not what I was saying either.
Like, I can't speak for the Blues, but even at a Flyers game, and this is when Andy would come and say, well, the Flyers are ass. So, but, you know, even when we score a Flyers game, like, you jump up and yell for, like, not even a sec. It's like, yeah, okay. And it's back to normal. Or obviously basketball. As much as I love basketball, you don't get like a big shot until the last 10 seconds.
The last minute of a basketball game is the only minute of the game really worth watching for atmospheric purposes.
What would the NFL equivalent of? I mean, I think the only thing I could think of again is like a field goal block, like a big touchdown toward the end of the game. But I think what makes soccer so amazing, especially in the Premier League or in Spain or in Europe in general, not to be a Euro snob, but it feels like every goal means so much more.
Yeah.
And I don't know why that is. I don't know. And there's great things about American sports too. So I'm not going to sit here and shit on it, but it's just something about when West Ham scores, and I just have chills going down my body, folks, by the way, just so you know, something about when West Ham scores, I can't even speak, euphoric.
Yeah. Well, like, especially when you are losing in a game and you come back the level and then take the lead
twice.
Yeah. Like it's, and this brings me on to another point, like Newcastle, why, like, I hate that they stick the fans all the way up at the top. It like kills, it didn't kill the atmosphere, but I think it would be so much better if they just allowed the fans to come down to the lower level. I can't stand, because on TV, like when Newcastle scored, the scenes looked brilliant. And then when we scored, you had to got like the side up look like crazy view. You could barely see it, like a couple of West Ham fans
cut shot
celebrating. Yeah. Whereas every other ground in the Premier League, you get the scenes right behind the goal where the players go over and celebrate with the fans. So Newcastle, fix your shit. Follow the rules. There's a rule that they find a loophole around,
but
that says
they've been doing it for how long now?
Well, for a while now. I mean, they didn't used to always be at the top. They didn't. So them and Sunderland are the only two teams that, to my knowledge, that do it. And I don't know what it is about the Northeast that they get away with that shit, but fix your things and follow the rules, Mike Ashley.
I don't find it that bad at Sunderland. I went to Sunderland away one time.
Yeah.
And I've been to Newcastle. You've been to Newcastle too.
I haven't done West Ham away though. I've seen two games at Newcastle, but neither of them were West Ham games. One of my favorite stadiums in the world, by the way. It, just imagine if they brought the fans down, how great it would be.
Yeah. So I've done both. I didn't find it that bad at Sunderland, but it's almost similar at Man United, because they have the handicap thing right in front of you.
Yeah, but you're not all the way in the heavens there. You're at least halfway down there.
Yeah, when I was at Old Trafford, I didn't think it was that bad. I didn't find Sunderland that bad. But Newcastle was, I mean, I about had a fucking heart attack getting up there, my chunky ass. So
yeah, me too.
Anyway. Should we get into the game?
Go ahead.
All right. So Yeah, not a great start. Well, actually, it was a great start. You know, we got that first corner, or I felt we took it to him the first 4 minutes. I was like, oh, wow, you know, we actually look pretty good. And then, of course, who's it? Lukaku and Callum Wilson. Do we have any other bogey people off the top of your head? Just quick thoughts.
That always score against us? No, the only other one that I can think of is...
Who's the dude from Brighton?
That's exactly who I was trying
Murray.
To think of.
Is it Murray?
Glenn Murray. That's exactly who it is. That's the only other guy that came to my head when you said that.
Lukaku, Wilson, and Murray. Yeah, so of course that had to be Callum Wilson. And...
Well, I said to... So I was watching with a bunch of Newcastle are probably the team that I have the most friends with that aren't West Ham fans. Like, the majority of my friends who aren't West Ham fans that I like hang out with at the pub are Newcastle fans. And naturally, Newcastle and West Ham, we have a lot in common. We really do. I think we're a similar size club. We both have owners who probably could do better things. And we're kind of mediocre most years. I think we're a very similar team. So naturally that's who I can relate to the most. And I was telling those guys, I said, I think the only way you guys beat us again is if Saint-Maximin and Wilson play 90 minutes and they rip us a new one. And instantly 4 minutes through, or not, it was four, it wasn't 4 minutes, but whenever they scored it, I was like, well, I mean, see, I mean, all Saint-Maximin's brilliant, by the way. I mean, what an absolute joy to watch.
He's incredible.
I wish he wasn't playing. Well, I like that he plays for Newcastle, but he belongs at a better team. But for his injuries, that's the only reason I think that's probably keeping him from doing that. And sure enough, at the beginning of the game, Saint-Maximin just dribbling back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, gets across in, and Wilson manages to somehow beat Dawson and Sofal to score. And, you know, I was all doom and gloom at that point. And I was like, well, here we go again.
Yeah, I was sick to my stomach, honestly. So I'm sitting there in Smithfield. It was me, Dan, and two of our other friends. And man, when he scored that goal, I was just like, yo, if I came all the way up here to get our ass waxed, and I was not in the mood. I just sat there in disbelief. I was more annoyed because of taking 0 points from them last year.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I think I said that on the last podcast. Like, those are the two games I looked at last year.
We both did.
And them and Arsenal were the two.
Yeah. I mean, if you add 4 points from them last year, we could do what ifs, because we won some out of nowhere games too and got some results. But moving forward, you know, I was like, after taking 0 points from them last year, and we were already down 1-0 early, defense looked a little shaky after that too. I was like, oh no, this is going to be a long game. Long season, no signings, and all that just started to doom and gloom and dwell. And I was getting a bit worried.
Yeah, well, so was I. But I thought, like you said, we actually came out and played pretty well off the get-go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I thought the defense was really all over the shop. But everything from Rice forward, I thought looked brilliant to start the game. And then sure enough, we get a fluky goal not too long after they scored, and I couldn't even tell you who scored. I think there was a funny screenshot of I don't remember who it was. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but there was like a screenshot of like three different things, and one of them said Cresswell scores, and then the next one said Suchek, what a goal. Scores. And then the third one down was like, oh, Bowen gets his goal. Like, that's just the funniest thing ever to me. And I did they give the goal to Cresswell? Is that who they gave
they
it
did.
To?
They did. According to Google, what I have on my screen here, it looked like Cresswell.
It looked like Suchek touched it, and then Bowen definitely touched it, but it was across the line. And, you know, my heart sank whenever you see the linesman flag up and, you know, typical West Ham.
Let's talk about that for a second, because I really do not like the fact that you can't see what they're doing anymore. I know I don't really believe in conspiracy theories. I really don't. But I feel like they just lost a lot of transparency when, like, you don't, the lines are dumb also, but the fact that they're not showing you what their process is I find kind of weird.
Yeah, I agree. And I didn't really notice it, if I'm honest. Again, at the bar, it's totally different than watching when you're at home because you miss things when you're in a big social group. So I guess I didn't even put that together that they didn't even really show it. But yeah, that if and like that's the only thing that we ask. Like if just add a microphone to the referee so you can hear what they're talking about whenever they're discussing it. I mean, that's the best thing you can do is just have some transparency. Let us know what's going on. Show us your reasoning, and then people will usually understand. Even if it's wrong, we can at least understand how they got there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just find it really uncomfortable because even like, I mean, you just said it spot on. I don't even know why I'm responding, but even if you don't see what they're looking at directly, if they can just talk you through it and they get it wrong, you're like, okay, well, I at least understand why they did what they did.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the referee, I actually thought, had a pretty good game up until the penalty. I mean, that's jumping ahead. So who scored Newcastle second? Jacob Murphy with, again, that's late in the first half. Jacob Murphy gets a header. And maybe I was the only one because I didn't go on Twitter. But was anyone else questioning Fabianski's positioning and why he didn't dive there? You might have seen it late, I guess, but if he dove, he got there. I mean, he could have saved it. It wasn't like it was a bullet header or anything.
So I literally just rewatched it, and I have two comments on this goal. Well, I have comments on the first one as well. Both goals came from a lack of clearance. But that's where it started. Neither of them were like a strong buildup. Both of them were pretty much on giveaways. And when you're rewatching this goal that Newcastle just scored, it did look that Fabianski was in a position to get there spacing wise. But as I just rewatched it, it looks like he was on his back heels moving backwards. So like if you rewatch it, he's like already kind of leaning, and I think a dive would have been really difficult. So if you're going to question his positioning, it would just be like his movement and the fact that he didn't dive. But
well, and by the way, I was hoping to see Areola instead of Fabianski. I don't know about you. And again, we're not there to see training, but I thought this was a perfect opportunity to get Areola. And why bring him in on loan if you're not going to play him? I know it's the first game of the season, but I was hoping to see Areola over Fabianski. And then for him to concede that one, I was like, man, I kind of wish Areola would have started.
No, I'm with Fabianski, and let me tell you why. Areola came in, what, 2.5 weeks ago, give or take? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Fabianski already – we didn't make any signings, as we're obviously going to get into later. So Fabianski already has the rapport, already has the chemistry, already has all these built in with the team. I like the Fabianski choice. I'm not there at training. I don't know how much better or worse Areola is. However, going with what I already know and someone who already knows this defense, I like the Fabianski pick.
And you really, at this point, you just have to trust David Moyes too. So, I mean, who am I to question what the guy's done over the past year and a half? But I thought it would have been a good time to start him. Prove me wrong. I mean, we ended up winning, so it doesn't really matter in the end. But I at least we have something to look forward to in seeing Areola in the future, because that's the only guy we've brought in so far. And then we get to the West Ham equalizing goal. I thought it was...
Well, it all started with Declan. Again, I have the highlights up, so just going through
great.
It. I mean,
yeah.
Declan, it all started because he made a great tackle in the midfield.
Yep.
And I thought he had a shaky first half, but that second half was incredible.
Yep.
From the guy. And shaky is harsh, by the way. I wouldn't even go with that bad, but that second half was incredible. So this goal all starts because of a great standing tackle in the midfield, plays it over out wide. And honestly, this is why I'm not a commentator, because I'm watching as we talk. When Antonio like loses the ball, you think, oh, yep, that's about right. And then he puts in like this crazy cross with his left foot, like perfect precision. And Benrahma does the business. That's your boy, by the way, Benrahma, taking it to the house.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably the first headed goal he's ever scored in a league season. I think he might have scored a header against Celtic, if I remember correctly. I could be wrong on that. But I was absolutely buzzing to see Benrahma score. I thought he was our best player on the pitch in the first half and the second half. I thought he was terrific. And I said this to my friends when I was watching. I said, Benrahma needs to be what Saint-Maximin is for you guys. I think if Benrahma can take guys on, make guys miss, make those passes, those 1-2s, build up that chemistry with his teammates, and he's got that. If he gets that finishing product, he's going to be absolutely sublime, which is, again, why I've been singing my praises for the guy for so long, because truly, I mean, there were points of last season where like, oh, he's not good enough. He's not good enough. He's shit. He's not good enough. And I was like, I know factually, I've seen it. I know that guy is in there. I know that world beater is in there. And we finally got to see it in a league performance. And I was so buzzing. And he was my man of the match, by the way. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, also back to Antonio one more time, but I know I said it was a crazy cross, but I didn't realize in the moment that it was one time. So he mishandled it. And then it's a left footed cross one time too. Like, yeah, he didn't take a touch. And then also, yeah, I mean, Benrahma putting it away with his head. I couldn't believe it. I'll tell you what though, when I was sitting there, I didn't really celebrate because I was still kind of annoyed in a way that it was 2-2. Like, mm-hmm. I was really excited that we equalized, but I was still annoyed that I really didn't think that we should have had to come from behind twice. So I was kind of in a pissy mood about that. And then after that, I mean, it was just one-way traffic.
Yeah. And the penalty, we can just get to the penalty now. When I watched it live, I definitely did not think it was a penalty. I thought it was just a nothing. I thought I think it was Murphy, I believe, and he went to ground and it looked like he might've gotten a piece of the ball. And then Fornals kind of exaggerated his fall. And I can see why Atkinson gave it, but I can also really see why Newcastle fans are upset with that, because if that were me, I would be bitching about it. Because I still, after watching the replays, I still don't think it was a penalty. And it was one of those for VAR. I can understand why maybe they didn't reverse it, but at the same time, it looks like if you zoom in, you can see Murphy getting a piece of the ball before he takes any of Fornals, and which is why if it were me, I would have been upset that VAR didn't overturn it.
And these are scenarios where I'm indifferent about VAR, because I don't want to say it's unnecessary, but I'm glad they stuck with what was on the field then, because I feel like there's a lot of 50-50 calls that are that close.
Yep.
And they do overturn it. And it's like, it was that close. And I know in this scenario it worked in our favor, but I feel like there's a lot of scenarios where you see it overturned and you're like, that could have gone either way. So you might as well just stuck with what the referee did.
Yeah.
And this all came about because of Antonio, I mean, rocketed off the post with his head, but to be fair, that ball into Antonio was a missile itself. Yeah. And I'm biased. I don't feel like I can have a fair opinion. I would have called a penalty. I think he went to ground. I think that Fornals did jump in the air, but I also think it was a penalty. So I don't know.
It just looked like Murphy took a piece of the ball before Fornals was even falling. So that's the only reason I think it wasn't a penalty.
The only thing I could think of is he got his upper leg first. That can be the only thing. And then I will say I did enjoy Cresswell taking the rebound shot and doming it off of one of the Newcastle defenders.
I did giggle at that when I saw that replay, that Cresswell just takes the one-time shot and it goes right off one of the Newcastle guys' heads. I thought that was hilarious.
Okay, so moving forward, is Antonio your penalty taker?
Yeah.
Did you find that a strange one, by the way?
No, he's a goal scorer. Goal scorers step up and score goals. I would have loved to have seen Declan step up, take the ball, take command of the situation and say, I'm taking this. This is my ball. I don't care that I missed my last one. I'm taking it. That didn't happen. The team usually has a set penalty taker. We're not there at training. If Antonio was the set penalty taker that day, then he's the penalty taker. So am I surprised? Absolutely not. The guy's a goal scorer. He was about to tie West Ham's top ever goal scorer. I mean, the guy wanted the goal. I applaud that. I want to see guys take a penalty with some confidence. And Antonio, he didn't make any stutters. He just stepped up. He hit it. He hit it pretty hard, but it was at the worst possible height for a goalkeeper. I mean, the goalkeeper saves that. If he guesses the right way, he's going to save that every single time. You're wanting to put it in a position. Obviously, I know I never took penalties, but you want to put
you?
It. And I was a goalkeeper, but you want to put it, even if the goalkeeper guesses right, the goalkeeper has a low percent chance of saving it. And where Antonio put that, You couldn't have put it any better. I mean, yeah, all you got to do is dive and it's going to hit his hands every time. Luckily, the ball rolled up underneath the goalkeeper. I think it was Woodman. And then Suchek followed up on the rebound. And by the way, the scenes of like Newcastle fans celebrating and then quickly shutting up, I thought was terrific. There were some good videos of that. But going forward, did you ask who would be my penalty taker?
Yeah, going forward, who's your penalty taker?
We say it every show. We're not there to watch training. For me, I would like to see Declan step up, same, have some balls, and the captain takes the pens, and that's the guy I would like to see. Now, I think Benrahma can do it, and I think Bowen could do it. If you're looking for new guys to take them, since Declan and Mikhail have missed their last two pens, I think next in line, I would like to see Bowen and or Benrahma. But part of me would also...
I was thinking Benny. Yeah. Benrahma.
I also would kind of like to see just Craig Dawson come in and just Julian absolutely obliterate one into just the middle of the net, just hit one as hard as he can. Part of me would like to see that, but yeah, either I would say if you're looking for new guys, Benrahma or Bowen. I think Bowen took penalties at Bowen or at Hull as well. So those would be good choices, I think. But I think just Declan, I want to see him. I want to see him take the bull by the horns. This is your team. Go do it.
Okay, so let's move on to the last goal. Okay, so one thing I didn't notice it now that watching back, first of all, that over-the-top ball to Benrahma was brilliant. But if you look at the video, Antonio started his run at, like, I can't give you an exact thing, so we're going to put it in NFL terms, at, like, our own 30-yard line.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he ran the whole length of the field. Benrahma slides it through absolutely perfectly. Like, it couldn't have been any more perfect. And then after making that, 80-yard run, Antonio was some finesse. Like, here I am talking shit like, oh, yeah, he's the tough guy, brute, putting balls into the net. However, I mean, he finished that with finesse after running 80 yards. Couldn't be me. Could not be me.
I wouldn't even say it was finesse. I thought he just hit the piss out of it across the goalkeeper and he had no chance. I mean, he placed it.
He placed it perfectly.
But look at the bulge of the net. I mean, he hit that thing. He put his laces through it, and it got side netting, which is perfect. I mean, you could probably say it's a combination of power and finesse, but the goalkeeper had no chance, and he puts him on his ass and fires it into the side netting, which is all you can do. And then that's when I was like, really, that I celebrated really hard after that, because
for me,
it's hard to celebrate. Like, I've always said, I think on a penalty, the play should be dead the second the goalkeeper makes the save. I don't think you should be rewarded again.
I agree.
Because mm-hmm. and Newcastle could have defended it better. I thought Richie was so slow, he could have gotten to it before Suchek. And Suchek followed up and in. But I was like, I was with my Newcastle friends. And there were my West Ham friends there too. And B, I didn't think it was a penalty. And then C, following in a greasy rebound, like, I just like felt a little dirty celebrating that goal because I truly didn't think it was a penalty. So when Antonio scored, there was some validation there. Like, okay, I mean, I thought we did deserve to win the game. And I thought we were two goals better than them on the day.
Yeah, but no, I agree with you. That extra goal that we scored really, really put it away without doubt.
Yeah,
that we were the better team and earned 3 points. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, rest of the game, I thought we defended very well. The only few other comments I had, I thought Saint-Maximin, as expected, absolutely ripped apart Craig Dawson and our outside backs. Gave me vibes of Zabaleta. Yeah. Oh, God. Do you remember that day? Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
So... But other than that, I mean, we were still on top of them. We had a few more shots in their final third. And I think we fully deserved the win there. And it was a great start to the season.
Yep. And I think home field advantage is back finally. So I thought that was a big hurdle. Fans back in the stadium is massive. And it was good to see us going away from home and still playing well and in front of a hostile environment. So I thought all the teams that opened up at home had an advantage this week. Clearly, like Brentford had a big advantage.
Yeah,
I thought there were a few other teams. It was really good to see fans back in the stadium, and they really helped push on and be the 12th man.
Well, honestly, you're spot on when it comes to that, because Newcastle started, you know, although we took it to them, that I think that goal was partially because they were at home.
Yeah.
Like I felt when they scored that goal 5 minutes in, and St. James just went absolutely bananas. I was very concerned, and not just about how, of course, we felt like we were on top of them and didn't score, but more along the lines of their fans sucking in two or three more, and we really bounced back. Even though we went 2-1 down, we really showed some guts this weekend, and that was exciting.
Yeah, and I don't know if this is right, so I hope someone can correct me if this is wrong. I should do my research before I say things like this, but I believe last year had the most ever away wins of any Premier League season. And I think this year you've already seen the trend of home wins. And if I could just pull up the results. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 home wins out of 2, 4, 6, 8, 9. So 6 out of the 9 home teams won. And I think that average is going to start to fall back to the home end rather than last year where it trended to neutral and away. So I think it's going to back up my proof that the home team had the advantage. Oh yeah. And Brentford. So it was 7 out of 10 home teams won.
One of the other things I find interesting looking at the table right now, as we do this late on Monday evening, there was not a single draw this weekend.
No, that's right.
Yep. 10 wins, 10 losses. One of which Arsenal in 17th. LOL. How about fucking Spurs beating City? That was something.
Yeah. That
definitely didn't see that happening.
That was the, I think Grealish has played 2 games for Man City and lost them both. So he's off to a good start there. And it gave the old Tottenham fans something to hold over Harry Kane because he's holding out for a move to Man City and they beat them. So, yeah, some real interesting score lines. So, like other games I was intrigued by, I think Man United looked brilliant against one of their rivals in Leeds. I think they're going to be a force to be reckoned with this year because I think now they are true title contenders. With the signings of Varane and Jadon Sancho. And I just think their squad is really good. And then Chelsea looked terrific. Again, them with Lukaku, they're going to be right up there again this year too. And I mean this with all respect to West Ham, I don't think West Ham will finish 2 points below Chelsea this year because I think Chelsea are going to be that good. And I think they're going to be right up there challenging. And Liverpool, I think that everyone's forgotten about Liverpool. I think they're going to be right there too. I think you're going to see a regular top four, top six resume this year without Arsenal being in that mix because they were appalling. And I really hope that they continue to struggle because I think we should be taking their top six place.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at some of the other results that we didn't mention, I interrupted you, but Watford,
yep,
getting a result over Villa was big. And I don't think 3-2 really is what that game deserved. They got
flatters Villa for sure.
Yep, absolutely. Even though they had the possession, they were absolutely dominated.
And Watford actually, everywhere else. Sorry to interrupt you. I actually put $20 on Watford to beat Villa because they were underdogs. And I thought, again, Villa,
a ton of new signings
and no Grealish. I thought that was another obvious one to me.
A lot of people in our group chat is rating Villa and their window. I don't think so. I don't think Villa is going to be all that. The other surprising result, Brighton, big win for them, 2-1.
Come from behind.
And one team I thought was going to be very scared, Everton, when they went down 1-0. I mean, I thought they looked terrible. And they came back and handled their business. So they could be interesting this year. Who knows?
Benitez had to win that game. Could you imagine if they started off with because they already hate the dude's guts. I mean, if they started off with the defeat, I think it could have been real ugly. And I really don't understand Everton fans. Like, I get you guys hate Liverpool more than anything on this earth, and I get he's a Liverpool legend, but he's a guy with pedigree that can help you. Now, I know you just had Carlo Ancelotti, but Real Madrid comes knocking and he's gone. So you're going to have to suck that one up. But to see Everton fans saying they would rather take David Moyes over Rafa Benitez, it was like just strange to me.
Yeah, and, no, I agree. What would the equivalent of that for us be? I guess it's hard to even think of.
Well, I mean, like getting Pochettino from that would never happen, obviously, at least not for a few more years. But like since Pochettino took Spurs to a Champions League final, even though they didn't win anything with them.
Or like Di Matteo or something. I don't know.
No, like I don't think there is a good equivalent because I mean, like if there was a Millwall manager who managed them for like 15 years and was like a Millwall player legend and we hired him, maybe you would get a similar thing. But
yeah,
I just think Everton fans, like, give the guy a chance to prove what he can do. And if he's terrible, then you get on him. But like to start off a tenure so negatively without even playing a game, I think it's just wild.
I mean, we kind of did that to Moise.
Not to this extent,
but I will say
Benitez has never been relegated. And Moyes had been relegated on his last like three jobs before he got to us. And then he didn't do that great. He kept us up the first time around and then we get him back. And it's but there was no banners outside the David Moyes' house saying Moyes, get out of our club and that sort of thing.
No, you're right. And then looking forward to match day two, there's a lot of interesting fixtures there. You're going to have Arsenal and Chelsea. You're going to have Spurs and Wolves will be interesting. That'll be
Nuno's reunion. Yeah.
Yep. That obviously we have Leicester on a Monday, which I just hate Monday games.
God, yeah, me too. I didn't even realize we played on Monday.
Well, just because we're American and it's like in the middle of the day. I wouldn't mind Monday night football if I was in like the UK.
Yeah, it's like the middle of my work day.
Yeah, it's bullshit. So now I gotta figure out like, oh boss, I got a meeting. You know, it's like I got a conference call at 3 and she'll be like, oh, okay, sure.
Yep.
So I hope she don't listen to this podcast. I get sacked. Yeah. Other than that, Villa, Newcastle. I mean, there's a lot of like even matchups or even Watford, Brighton. One of them could end up with 6 points after this game. You know, City has an easy one against Norwich, Southampton, Man United. And let's see what else did I miss. Brentford and Palace. Everton leads. So, yeah, a lot of interesting matchups there too. So I think we're in store for a hella interesting season. And I think the reason I brought that up so early is because Arsenal dropped points against Brentford. It don't get any easier for them. Like I said, they played Chelsea. And then the week after that, they got City.
Yeah, I would love to see Arsenal in the bottom three after like the first month of the season. I think that would be hilarious.
Yeah,
and going, Arteta going out, into the trending on Twitter.
Yeah, going into the international break, they could easily be without a point.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I don't got anything else about the game. Do you want any final thoughts before we take a quick break and go into some Twitter and further lack of summer window, I guess? I'm sure Twitter has mentioned that at some point.
Yeah, well, I think we can just dive straight into Twitter because I think there were some really good questions this week and I just want to go ahead and get it rolling. So
I don't need a break.
Read the first one off here. This one is from Not Ryan at Amish Goat Farm on Twitter. And he says, if Lingard does end up with us, are you worried at all that him showing up late to the season after making it clear he wants to stay in Manchester will upset the dressing room? Would think Bowen and Ben Rama at least would have an issue with him walking into the side.
Ooh, can I start here?
Yeah.
Or let me pose this question back to you, hypothetical. I don't really think he's made it abundantly clear that he wants to be at Manchester United. Like, I don't agree. I think he was glad to be back. But also what you see on social media is like almost the things he has to do. Like if a club says, hey, we're going to keep you, then I think you go on social media, say, glad to be back at training. Take a picture for the lads and get like a bunch of Instagram likes to get the fans on your side. I think if he signs with us late in the window and he puts up like unfinished business, hashtag unfinished business, and does like the crossed irons. I think he easily gets a billion likes there too, and everyone's not talking about it. So I feel like this is he wants to clearly wants to be in Manchester thing. I don't necessarily agree with that. But to be fair, you know, he could easily be wanting to be in Manchester, which is could easily, I think, be a top three side. So
yeah, and it's
who's going to play Champions League, and it's his boyhood club. So yeah. I could see it both ways. However, I think that he is a professional. I think that he went on loan and played incredible for us. And I think if we were to sign him, and I think he would be welcomed back by the team as well. And the fellow players, I really do believe that we're going to need the depth. If you look at our bench, these guys, I genuinely believe, because Ryan mentioned Bowen and who else in the tweet?
And Rama.
I think that they both are going to have to realize also that the two of them are not playing 38 games plus six more plus at least two more between the League Cup and FA Cup. Right there, that's what? 44 games, 46?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a championship season. So I think Lingard would be welcomed. I think it would be his quality. I think if anyone who would be upset, it would be Fornals. But I think that there's going to be plenty of game time and rotation that I don't see it being a locker room issue.
Yeah, I don't anticipate any dressing room drama. I think these players got to know him last year. Ben Rama obviously got held out of the team most games for him. So I think he would probably be maybe worried about losing his place, but after his performance against Newcastle, there's no way you drop him. So I think, like you said, you need the depth. These guys are going to understand that. It's going to be a rotation between those four guys, Fornals, Bowen, Lingard, Benrahma. I think it just, you need depth. I think they've got to realize that. And competition isn't always a bad thing. Is it maybe a little frustrating sometimes? Yeah, but like you said, 38 Premier League. Guaranteed six in Europa with hopes for more. And even if you get knocked out of Europa, if you finish in third, you're still going down to the Conference League. So there's games there. So there's plenty of game time to go around. So I think it does nothing but add to the team, which is clearly something that we need to do. I can somewhat see now, I've been saying this whole time, I can't for the life of me understand why center back is being looked at over striker. I think you kind of saw the answer to that on Saturday with how loose the center back play was. So maybe I can understand that now. I still think we desperately need a striker because Antonio looked great. But as I've said 500 million times, I guarantee you at least twice this year, he will miss a significant stretch of games and we will be needing a striker then. So I still think striker and center back are 1A and 1B. We got to get in the door, but am I worried at all that Lingard showing up late will make a locker room drama scene? No, I don't think that's the case. And I also, to rebuttal your point about him wanting to stay in Manchester, it did seem like everything that X was saying was him wanting to stay in Manchester, fight for his place, play for his boyhood team, regain the fans. And I can understand, like, okay, let's give it like all of preseason, the start of the season. And if I'm still not in the team, then okay, I will look to move elsewhere. So it does seem much more positive now that Lingard does want to come. But at the same time, he just caught COVID. And that is a killer. When you miss 2 weeks of training with that team that you're trying to get in, I think that is an absolute killer. And he wasn't even on the bench against Leeds because he's still isolating. I think he just came back into training. So that's a killer for him. And I don't see any way that he gets back into that Man United team anytime soon. So you got to be thinking, we got a World Cup next year. Lingard has to be in front of Southgate playing and scoring in order for him to even have a chance. Because you saw the end of the season he had last year, which was terrific. And he still didn't make the Euro squad. So I think if he wants any hopes of the World Cup, you got to play.
Let's just say my scenario is wrong and he's just doing what he has to do, right? So let's say we go with your scenario where he wants to stay and fight. I don't hate him for that. Like,
no,
I don't hate him for that.
Never fall in love with an on loan player. That's always the saying you hear. Never fall in love with an on loan player.
And I won't even feel dirty if he came back after. Like, let's just say he was like, I want to stay in Manchester. He doesn't stay in Manchester, comes back. Okay, well, yeah, I'm sorry. Like, that's just the truth of the matter is that they're a bigger club. Like, that's understandable.
Arguably the biggest club in the world. Arguably.
Yeah. So, no, I don't hate him for that. I would welcome him back with open arms for the right price. And I hope that he can, if he does come back, I hope that he can deliver the same energy and success that he did the first time. Because I would be very, very upset if he did not. And we spent a lot of money because we've been doing that a lot, spending money on players and it just bust. And then the board's like, well, we're not spending money because everyone we bring in sucks. And then it's just the never ending. Where's the recruitment? Blah, 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 blah. Okay, so next question you kind of touched on, but just to confirm it, because I want to give shout out to Ian. He says, evening chaps, as the transfer windows ends, and oh God, I apologize, I can't talk. Evening chaps, as the transfer windows end draws closer, if we could get in only one player, what position do you think we need to reinforce the most? So obviously you banged home striker and center back. I feel like those are the obvious answers. I'm going to agree with you. Obviously, Antonio, he's now finally proven to me that he's a striker. Okay, I'll concede that. But he is injury prone. And let's just say he's not injury prone. Like, let's just say Antonio played all 46 games. You're going to get, like, you need rotation, especially come December. Because come in December, you're going to add Europa League and those fixtures anyway. So, yeah, I think a striker is the most important. Center back would be second most important to me. Diop makes me nervous. However, the way Craig Dawson played, I'm not ready to write him off after one game because he had a bunch of great games last season. But I think toward the end, I didn't think he played all that great. And I thought he got absolutely toasted yesterday? Sunday. Yeah, so yesterday.
That was yesterday, yep.
Yeah, so that does shaky for me. I think Diop and Ogbonna could be good again together if they regain form. Obviously, Balbuena's gone. So I think those two are the obvious answers that you already said.
Yeah, I think if we're not going after Milenkovic anymore, we need to go find a replacement for him because I do think now after seeing what David Moyes has seen for so long, I think a defender is needed. And then obviously striker. But if you're looking past that, I would say the left back position, you might start to worry about if Cresswell picks up an injury. You don't necessarily have much cover there. Masuaku is coming back from injury. I'm excited to see him come back, but he's never fit, it seems like, either. So I think left back could use. And then I think another holding midfielder, potentially, if Coventry isn't the answer, then you're going to have to look there. But the obvious answer is we just said striker, center back, that we got to get one of those. We got to get both of those positions addressed. I really think if we don't bring in two or three players, and again, I'm not saying massive overhaul, but two or three players you have to add to your squad for Europe. If we don't, I think the guys will tire very, very quickly. The next question we have here is from Dave Sperry at D Sperry 1980. And he says, Fabs looked a little shaky in goal. Would you start Areola in the next game? Also, we have an issue with penalties and who takes them if Noble isn't available. Who would you suggest be taking them? Well, we touched on the second half of that question already, but go ahead and address, would you start Areola over Fabianski? I think I know your answer, but go ahead.
No, I stick with Fabianski. I really do. I don't have an issue with Areola. I think this might be the new title of our podcast. I'm not at training. But I think you stick with what you know, and I'm not ready to move on. I think that he was shaky at times. However, it was the first game of the season, and I think that Areola just got here, and it seems to me that this is going to be a long-term purchase. It's just a loan, so we don't have to pay today, and which they probably paid a loan fee anyway. So no, I'm content with Fabianski starting. If he's shaky again against Leicester, then I would agree to start him against Palace the following week.
Yep. You want to go ahead and read the next one?
Yeah. And the next one, actually, can we go back for 5 seconds? I want to finish one last thought about the transfers in real quick. When you mentioned left back, I want to just touch on one more thing. When we're talking about the left back scenario, when you have Masuaku and Creswell, the issue I have with those two guys is on their day, they're perfectly serviceable. Like both of them, Masuaku is pretty dang good in the attack that on the right day, he's the right fit. And Creswell, same. I mean, hey, he's the one who puts in the goal and also has great service. The problem is they're so inconsistent that it's really detrimental. And I think that we need consistency in that position. I don't think the talent is not there. I think the consistency is what is missing.
So, yeah, I think that's sorry, a valid point.
Add that in. The next one's from Jeremiah Carson. Was the defense so bad due to it being the first match of the year, or do West Ham really have a glaring issue in the back?
I think it's a combination of the two, and I can sit on a fence as good as anyone can, but if I had to pick one over the other, I do think we probably are starting to get the beginning of a glaring issue at center back, which is, again, more than likely why David Moyes is trying so hard to bring in a center back rather than a striker, which I can't figure out why we seem to be incapable of like talking to both more than one player at this or addressing more than one position at the same time. I don't understand that. I think that could be a GSB thing. I don't know that factually, but I think it's more of Dawson is getting old. He surprised a lot of people last year, but you maybe get to see the guy that Watford fans hated so much start to creep back in. I'm not jumping on Dawson's back. He's getting older. Obviously Ogbonna and Dawson are two older center backs, but I think we're starting to see an issue form at that position.
It's funny. I'm just like rolling out of my chair right now because I did not realize that Craig Dawson is younger than Ogbonna.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah,
Ogbonna's been around forever.
Yeah, Ogbonna's 33. Dawson's 31, which yeah. Like, so our Premier League center back pairing are both over the 30 hump.
Yep.
That's a bit concerning.
Yep.
And Diop has been fine. I don't think Diop's been that bad, honestly. I don't think he's been great. I think he has spells of excellence. You could see why he was the loose captain at 22, and was in the French youth side. I think there's glimpse there if they can get him out. I think he's got the same problem as Creswell and Masuaku is the consistency. I think on their day, he's a hella good player, and yeah. He's very agile. I just think he makes too many mistakes and is inconsistent.
And to me, the biggest issue I see with him is he doesn't look up for a fight, a battle against that gritty, strong number nine, like your Burnleys, your Chris Woods, you coming up against them. He does not do well against them. And that is the difference between Liga and the Premier League, I think, which the first season under Diop, I think he played pretty well, but against those smaller number nines, he had a good day. The guys that weren't physical and rough and tough with him, but the guys like your Andy Carrolls and your Peter Crouches, I think he would really struggle to go up against. And that's my biggest concern with Issa, because I think, as I said, your Gabriel Jesus is your smaller number nines, but like against Antonio in training, he probably struggles a lot, if I would venture to guess. So I just think Issa needs to bulk up and strengthen before he's going to really succeed in this league. I really truly think that.
Yeah, so I want to read the next one is from Tony Hatcher. So Jack Collison will be in Pittsburgh on Sunday. By the way, Tony Hatcher's in Pittsburgh as well. What do you think the best way to catch his attention is? ? Figured something during warmups when he's less busy. And friend of the pod, Jack Collison, just responded to our man, Tony Hatcher, and said, of course, come say hello. So if you didn't get a chance, go listen to our interview with Jack Collison, Atlanta United 2, as well as Welsh player and former West Ham player, with a lot of interesting perspective on the United Soccer League, which is the second division in America, and also his time at West Ham and him and Brawley swoon over the Euros while I sit there in silence.
Yeah, and I replied to Tony's tweet saying, if I were you, I'd wear a West Ham shirt or bring a West Ham shirt with you and try to get his attention during warm-ups. And then I tagged Jack Collison and said, would you come say hi to another Hammers fan during warm-ups against Pittsburgh? And that's when he replied, yes, come say hello. So what a guy Jack is.
Killer dude, really is
a class act. And I think there's not many Premier League players cut from the same cloth as him. So that's awesome. I really hope Tony and Jack get to connect during the Riverhounds Atlanta United game. And by the way, the Riverhounds Stadium, I think it's Primark Stadium or Highmark Stadium.
Highmark.
Yeah,
I've been there twice. It's pretty damn cool. It's beautiful on the river.
It's on my bucket list. The backdrop of the river, it doesn't get much cooler than that. One side of the stadium doesn't have any seats. It's just the river. So awesome. If you're ever in Pittsburgh, go check out a game. The next one is from our buddy Scott Davis at Scott M. Davis TV. And he says, pick two players from any league outside of the top five leagues in Europe. Who do you want at West Ham?
See, here's my issue is I honestly don't know that many. I'll pick Americans then. How about I know he just transferred, but how about Brendan Aaronson coming from the Philadelphia Union, lighting it up in Salzburg? So I think that would be my one choice. I think Salzburg counts as not top five. And how about Mark McKenzie? I'm going to go with another American and Philadelphia Union player who is at Anderlecht, I think, in Belgium. So those would be my two choices, and go America.
Yeah, this is a
Nick Stampart question, okay? I don't fucking know this one.
I mean, I don't watch much soccer outside of the Premier League, if I'm honest, not even La Liga or the Bundesliga or Liga or Serie A. So Scott, I am sorry. I don't really know how to even, I don't know who I would even think of. If I did my research, if I would have seen this question before, I probably would have done a little more research going into this one. I think the championship is outside of the top five leagues in Europe. So my favorite players in the championship right now would be like Mitrovic. I think he's a good striker for Fulham. I think if I'm going off the grid a little bit, I think Daryl DK, the American, would be cool to see him play for us. So
he's in Orlando now, right? I think he just went to MLS.
I couldn't tell you, honestly. I just thought he was awesome at Barnsley last year.
Was he at Barnsley or Bristol?
I thought it was Barnsley, but maybe it was Bristol City. I don't know.
It was Barnsley. You are correct.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, I wish I could give you a better answer than that, but I just don't know enough outside of England really to give a good answer. So I think this is the last question we have here from Jeremiah Carson at underscore Jeremiah C underscore. Oh, we already said that one. So, yeah. Did we cover all of them?
I think so. I do want to ask you one more question, okay? Sure. Because nobody responded to me in the group chat. Not our English group chat, the American group chat. I did a Sporkle. You know what Sporkle is?
No.
Okay, Sporkle is this thing. It's like they do quizzes, and you have to like answer as many questions as you can. It'll be like, name all 32 NFL teams.
Okay.
Or name all 92 top four division teams. Well, I just did a Sporkle the other day. It was updated in 2017, so it was a tad old. But my buddy Clay said, how many teams in the top four divisions could you name their club by looking at their badge with the name removed? How many out of the 92? Now, keeping in mind it was 2017 when I did it, so there's a few older ones in and out. I'll tell you what I did, but how many do you think you could do right this second? Do you think you could get all 92?
I think I could get pretty damn close to the 92. I think I would get really close. So I'll have to send me that so I can do it.
I'm going to send it to you. I got 88.
I think I would be like right there. I think I would struggle to beat that, I think, because there's probably a few where without the name on it that like way down the leagues that I would probably struggle with. But through the top three divisions, so the Premier League, the Championship, League One, I think I would get every single one. I think once I get down to League Two, that's when I would maybe start to struggle. But I think even then I'm pretty good at that. So I think I could go for the 92. I really think I could.
Okay. So the four that I missed was, I'm looking back at the tables of them. I could tell you the first one, I missed Accrington.
Yep.
I missed Accrington.
I could get Accrington Stanley. Yeah. I think I could get that.
Yep, I missed Accrington, Barrow.
Barrow,
excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Crawley Town, and somebody who's now in the National League. So
Who was it? Do you know?
I'm going to look in the National League while you talk for a second.
Sorry.
Let's see. English National League.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot. But speaking of the National League, my buddy Danny Whitehall, who played for Kilmarnock last year, unfortunately, they got relegated out of the Scottish Premier League. But he just signed for a National League team. He signed for Eastleigh FC today, who I think have one of the coolest badges in all of football right now. Now, I will say I'm not a fan of the circle badges because everyone's going to those damn circle like template badges. But the Eastleigh badge with the Spitfire plane sprawled out across it is probably one of the coolest logos I've ever seen. So shout out to Eastleigh and shout out to my boy Danny for signing for them. Good luck this year. I told him he's got to send me a shirt this year because I didn't get one of his Kilmarnock shirts. So I need one of your Eastleigh shirts, Danny.
Okay, so it was Barnett. That's the last one I didn't get.
Ah, yeah.
So Barnett, Barrow, who else did I say?
Accrington Stanley,
and I think it was
Barrow. Yeah, so all A's and B's there.
Yeah, but I think that was pretty good for an American just looking at the badge with no name. 88 yep. out of 92. I mean, that's not easy, and you only get 20 minutes.
Yeah, I think I would be right there with you at 88 probably.
And I had a witness, by the way. So if we need to tag his ass on Twitter, just so that no one says I cheated. So
yeah, you need to send me that. But anyway, let's preview the Leicester game. So as you stated, Monday, the dreaded Monday 2 p.m. Central game over here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
We played Leicester, who we fared really well against. And I did want to bring up one other point. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what podcast it was, but they talk about like the table in terms of like the results you got last year. And this year we're already plus three because we got 0 points against Newcastle last year and we picked up 3 points. So if we can build off of that and get the same results as we did this year, we're going to be looking mighty fine. So, but I love that we are already 3 points ahead of the same fixture as last year. So I just wanted to bring up that point, but Leicester, we picked up 6 points against last year. So we need to beat them to hold that form of the table. And Leicester looked really good. I hate to say it, but Leicester looked really good.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to be challenging right there with us again this year. So what are your thoughts going into this Leicester game and a home game under the lights of London Stadium?
I think the crowd will get behind the team, and I think everyone will be glad to be back. I think before the game, it might be a little uneasy. I think because we won against Newcastle really changed the atmosphere of what we're going to see Monday night.
And this is our home field advantage. This is our turn.
Yes, I think
on national TV.
I think the fact that we won against Newcastle really changes the mood going into this Leicester game. If we would have lost against and didn't come back twice against Newcastle, I think and made zero signings, I think the London Stadium Monday night might have been a damn war zone. So I think GSB needs to thank David Moyes and give him a few signings in his as a thank you, because I think it would be really nasty on Monday night. So I'm excited to have the fans back. I'm excited to see what this team can bring to the table. I think one thing I want to touch on, which pairs in with the Leicester game a little bit, and you're like how we did last season comment. I don't think David Moyes is exactly wrong with his comments of what he said is we have a very good team.
Yeah.
I think in the context of making zero signings, and I think in the heat of the moment that people are GSB out, myself included, and are very angry with the lack of infrastructure in the team and investment, I think his comments did not help. But I think he also is his job to say that he's behind the team, right. A team that did finish sixth last year. Sure. Did other teams make investments? Yes. Okay.
And so he's not going to speak out against his bosses either and say, oh,
thank you.
I wanted all these players. So I'm
I'm not
really,
gonna,
I'm really mad with my boss right now.
Right. Don't get me started on the he should walk thing that we're all arguing about in the group chat. But the point of the story is I think that we do have a very good team. We have the same team. We didn't lose any key players that delivered us this result other than Lingard, who might be coming back. And I think there were certain games, if I'm being completely honest with you, that I think Lingard was the game changer. And I think there was a few games that, and this is just me being trying to be positive, I guess, that I didn't think that he was a stud. And I think that his team, they rallied behind his lack of performance in that one game, and they delivered the result. So I think that we can still beat Leicester. I think that they are beatable. I think we have the same team that delivered us the results last year, and I think that we can get a dub. I really do.
I was listening to Talk Sport on the way to the Amsterdam Tavern.
That's your biggest mistake.
There was a pundit on there who said, I'm really worried about West Ham. They haven't signed anyone, which I agree with in his defense. But then he goes on to say they relied so heavily. He said relied so heavily on Jesse Lingard last year. And I don't think that's true. We were right up there. Even when he wasn't with us, we were fighting in the Europa Champions League places without Jesse Lingard. He came in, he played really well. He added to what we had, and I thought he was terrific down the stretch. But to say we relied, like the only reason we had success last year was Jesse Lingard, is just a statement by someone who doesn't watch West Ham very often. And that really grinded my gears. So I wanted to say that.
Jesse Lingard elevated the performances. I don't think that he
added to the team. He did the job that he was brought in to do.
Agreed. Yeah, we're on the same page.
And as far as the Leicester game goes, I'm with you. I think we have every chance to go in and beat them. If last year's anything to go off of, they're a very beatable team. The way we played does not suit Leicester because they like to attack and they like to hit you on the break. And we like do the same thing. And we kind of out Leicestered Leicester last year, if that makes any sense at all.
I think we
played really well, and we executed the game plan against Leicester better than probably any other opponent last year, I think. So I think you're right. I think we can have every chance of going in and getting a result. And I think this is our turn to have that home field advantage. And I think we get it done. I'm going to say 2-1 West Ham. And I think Benrahma gets on the score sheet again. So I really am optimistic going into this one.
I'm going to go 3-2. Awesome. I think that we banged the goals. However, I don't think we stopped leaking them. So I think 3-2.
Awesome. Well, I think that just about wraps it up this week. Tony, thanks for joining me. Guys, if you could go, please leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, and go follow us on Twitter at West Ham Way US Pod. You can follow Tony on Twitter at Tony Clark Dupe, and you can follow myself on Twitter at Brawley Darbin. And that will do it for this week, guys. Let's thank you so much for tuning in. We're going to try to get back to doing these every Sunday or Monday night, get them out the next morning, and we'll get back to a regular schedule. Thank you for sticking with us, and hopefully we come back to you after another 3 points in the bag and we're sitting top of the league. Who knows? But until then, we'll see you later.
Big games, big moments, big rewards. Absolutely. And huge disappointment. All season, promotion demanded by West Ham. On a sunny afternoon in May at Wembley, promotion to the Premier League has been delivered. Ricardo Garcelay, one of the January arrivals, with the biggest goal he will have ever scored. And West Ham, Wembley winners again for the first time since 1980. But more significantly, back in the Premier League.